Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Legal Aid Works is in this morning. Ann Klockner is here, and she has brought a student that we will meet in just a second. But Ann, it is good to have you here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted.
It is. We're gonna get into one of our topics is gonna be a disaster. We've done this for a few years. When a disaster strikes, we always talk about getting ready for a hurricane, and we talk about all the usual things. And it was a few years ago you came to me and said, you know, there are some important documents you need to think about. So we're going to get into to some of that. But let's start off, and then we'll talk more with Riley in a bit. But I thought I'd let you introduce. You brought a student along that is helping you in the office this summer.
Yes. So when we're lucky, we are fortunate to have students all through the year. Undergrads mostly from University of Mary Washington, because that's so obviously a good partnership that we have. But we also have law students who are at graduate school, who are going to law school. And during the summers, generally, we get a summer law clerk to come in and help us out. And this year, we are lucky to have Riley Bowling. And she is just completed her first year of law school at William & Mary.
So I learned this morning, Riley, that you then would be a rising 2L.
Yes, that's correct. Rising 2L.
I did not know that. And I guess the L stands for law.
Presumably.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So welcome. And you've got some roots in this area.
I am. Yeah, I'm from Hartwood originally. So technically my zip code puts me in Fredericksburg, but I'm really from Stafford County. So, yeah.
And your part of Stafford has really changed with a Hartwood High School this year.
Yeah, Hartwood High School. We used to have to, okay, it's really weird. I used to have to go 20 minutes up to Mountain View High School all the way up on the north side
of
Stafford.
That's what I figured.
Right. But the weird thing is that the neighborhood that I'm in is still zoned for Mountain View High School. It's not zoned for this Hartwood High School, even though we're only like 5-10 minutes from Hartwood High School. The way that Stafford County zones these high schools is really weird.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. Yeah. That you sometimes run into those things, and that is very strange. We'll get back to you in just a second to talk about everything. But before we do, was going to law school, when did that desire occur?
Honestly, in kindergarten. This has been my desire for the longest time. When I was a kindergartner, I had this book that was like all of these different facts about the president, but it was kind of geared for younger children. And one of the facts that they had about the president was that, I think it was that the president makes enough money to go to Disneyland like once a week or something like that. And so as a kindergartner, obviously,
yeah,
that sounds really, really cool.
That's the job I want.
Exactly. And so I was like, I'm going to be president one day. And the way that I'm going to do that is by becoming a lawyer. And I mean, essentially, since then, my love for the law has not faded.
Interesting. We'll talk more. And when did you decide you wanted to be a lawyer?
When I was kind of grade school.
Okay.
So I'm a little later than Riley on that. But yeah, I thought there was a book. And so I think we have a theme here is get kids books.
Right.
So that they will start thinking about their careers. But it was about George Washington. Mm-hmm. And my teacher gave me the book because I had been a good reader. And so she gave me this book as an award, and it was The Life of George Washington. It's ironic that I end up in his hometown now. But it said that he was, and they used a word that I didn't know, and it was a lawyer. And what's a lawyer? And I had to look it up because I didn't know what that word meant.
Yeah.
And then that got me thinking, and it was interesting to know that it looked like it was pronounced one way, but it was actually pronounced another way, and that was really interesting. So that kind of piqued my interest, and I think a lot of people at law school will tell you that their families think they should be lawyers because they argue really well.
Mm.
That's very common.
Yeah.
You'll ask a lot of law school students about that, and they'll say, yeah, my parents said I was a good arguer. So I love to argue.
Interesting. Before we take a break, for those who don't know, little bit about Legal Aid Works and the good work that you do in this community and in many communities around here.
Sure. So most people will assume that when you're low income and you need a lawyer, and you can't afford one, one will be provided for you. We hear that all the time. If you cannot afford a lawyer, one will be provided for you. That sounds so great on all those cop shows. But that has only applied for criminal cases, and only very recently. And so if you're poor and you have a civil legal problem, tough luck. There is absolutely no right to a free lawyer when you're poor and you have a civil legal problem. So if a domestic violence victim wants a civil protective order, she'll have to go to court alone against her abuser, who may be the one with the money and can mm-hmm. afford a lawyer. So when she shows up to get that civil protective order, will the judge appoint her an attorney? Never. So we exist as a private nonprofit law firm for the poor because it bugs us, like on a cellular level, when people are treated differently in the civil court system simply because of their bank account, not because of the law or the facts or anything like that. So that's who we are and that's what we do. We cover 17 counties with three offices, one of which is in Fredericksburg, another in Culpeper, another one in Tappahannock. And we've been doing that for many, many years. We started in 1973 and we represent people in civil cases like family law, housing, consumer, things like that.
And you do it with a
skeleton crew,
right? You're small but mighty for sure.
Scrappy is what I always say. Very scrappy. We have 9 lawyers covering those 17 counties, 51 courts. It's a lot. So we triage just like an emergency room without enough doctors. So we're always kind of trying to get to as many people as we can. We cover over, I think it's, we closed more than 400 cases last year with those 9 lawyers. Mm.
Riley, for you to observe Legal Aid Works in the lawyers and what they do during the course of a day, a week, a month, while you're here. How does that change how you look upon, you know, being in law school and what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really different, like, between seeing, you know, like, the law in the sort of, like, theoretical sense, like, the way that you do when you're in school, yeah. versus seeing how it's, like, actually being applied, you know, like, actually getting the opportunity to look at, like, the way that these attorneys work, or the way that, like, the documents that you have to submit to the courts look, or even just, like, talking to the people who are, you know, having these problems and really getting that, like, face-to-face experience. I think it's really just kind of, there's, like, a pretty distinct difference, I think, I've seen between, like, or maybe not different so much, but, like, it is kind of different the way that something, like, happens, like, theoretically, you know, like, oh, the laws are sort of this way, but then when you actually see them, like, acted out, like,
in real world,
like, it's pretty different. It's pretty unique.
Yeah. Riley Bowling is here. She's a William & Mary law student here, along with Ann Klotner with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org for more information. We'll take a break and continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Ann Klotner here this morning, along with Riley Bowling from Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. We'll start off, Ann, by talking about storm preparation. And like I said earlier, you were the one who years ago said to me, we ought to do a show and talk about getting ready for storms, because you do never hear about saving papers. We hear about all the other things, and, you know, have your flashlights ready and all that kind of stuff. But when we got into this and started talking about it, a storm can really wipe you out in a lot of different ways.
It can, and then that wiping out becomes so much harder to bounce back from mm-hmm. when you haven't thought ahead about the paperwork. Everything about FEMA, everything about insurance, everything about your mortgage and your lease and all that is all based on paperwork. And you're already living without electricity for a few days. You're cranky. There's all kinds of stuff. So now let's introduce bureaucracy and lack of paperwork and you running around trying to get another copy of your driver's license or whatever and going to the DMV after a disaster. It's just the worst. So a little bit of preparation ahead of time, just like with batteries and extra water yeah. and all that other stuff for the physical stuff, is going to really help you afterwards to bounce back quicker and more effectively from a disaster. So the first thing to think about before we list all the documents is how you would store them. So there's a bunch of different ways to store important documents. One is, I think the most old-fashioned way to think about it is a safety deposit box at a bank. Mm-hmm. That has some advantages because it's super secure. It does have a disadvantage, and that is if it's a profound disaster, showing up at your bank is not always going to work in the middle of, you know, you being relocated to a shelter or something and then trying to get transportation yeah. to your bank. And is the bank going to be open? The bank employees have their own disasters to deal with. Are they coming into the office and opening the bank and all that? So a safety deposit box most people think is secure, and it is. It's just not convenient and accessible right after a disaster. Another one that people think about is a waterproof safe, and that's pretty good. It's a little bit more expensive than another DIY option, which is just a Tupperware box or a Ziploc box, yeah. a Ziploc bag. So anything that's waterproof would work fine in a pinch. But these days, one of the things we're recommending is putting things in the cloud, because then later on, all you need is a connection to the internet and some device, and sometimes that's enough. Now, sometimes it's helpful to have the physical paperwork right there instead of relying on a phone, and the phone needs juice and, you know, whatever. So yeah. it still is best to think about Tupperware and Ziploc bags. So that would be the ways I would suggest to start thinking about storing them. Something that can be grabbed quickly, that isn't bulky, that isn't in four different cubby holes in your house, but is all together in one place that you can kind of grab and go. So what kind of things would you put in there? The first thing to think about is just anything that would be hard or impossible to replace quickly after a disaster. Your driver's license, your passport, your social security card. If you're an immigrant, you'd want your green card, your work authorization, anything that shows who you are. A birth certificate, believe it or not, even at my advanced age, I would still want to have my birth certificate. Sometimes, because if a driver's license is damaged or something else, it can be kind of the portal to a lot of other ID documents.
At my advanced age also. I just recently, it still is something you sometimes have to produce.
Yes, I have a friend who has their baptismal record. I said, I think you could let that go.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think that's important. But birth, marriage certificates, yeah. Adoption, divorce, custody documents, any kind of orders or decrees from the court, a protective order that you have. So any of those legal documents, and you think, oh, well, they've got those at the courthouse. Really? That courthouse that got destroyed in the tornado too?
Yeah. I mean,
so you always, it's belt and suspenders, and always kind of think about what you would need and that would be difficult or complicated or impossible to replace. Another thing to look at is anything regarding your housing. A copy of your lease is going to be really important. Whose responsibility is it to have this kind of insurance or that kind of insurance? Mortgages, deeds, anything that shows your ownership or your lease relationship with the landlord. So there's probably some other documents you might be able to think about, but those are the core ones. So the IDs, the certificates that prove birth and marriage, any kind of court orders, and your housing documents. Those are kind of the big categories that you'd want to really set aside, because FEMA, insurance, landlord disputes, all those other things that we can talk about in some other specific things are going to always start with, well, what did your lease say? What do the divorce documents say about drop-off and pickup of the kids for custody? Oh, I can't go to the drop-off to get my kids to their dad for his weekend. What does the court say about that? So those are all things that eventually will lead to somebody trying to understand and read a document. And so the more you can have those documents just as part of your go bag, the better.
Before this conversation started, I would have thought, if you'd given me a little test and said what I stored in, I would have thought a waterproof, fireproof kind of safe. And you still need some of those. But as you've talked about, you've gotten me thinking that just to be to have it portable and to have it to be able to take it, because you don't know where the condition of whatever you're dealing with, whether it was a fire or a flood or whatever, to get to that safe may take some time. So right. Yeah, I can see having something portable or on the cloud is preferable
and very practical, because right. What are you going to do? Schlep that waterproof safe to the high school gym where you're sheltering?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. You don't want to be taking something big and heavy and bulky. You want something that is pared down and waterproof, because it's going to be raining or it's going to be inclement weather or wind-driven rain or whatever the circumstances are. You want it to be stored somewhere quick to pick up and waterproof.
And I guess this is the kind of thing, like right now, on a day like this, when it's sunny out, sit down as a family and talk about these things. So you're not, in 10 hours when a storm comes, you're not scrambling to look and find things.
It makes sense in all the different ways that we always hear about disaster prep is doing it not the 3 hours before the storm hits kind of thing, because you're going to be at a line in Food Lion with everybody else with their little jugs of water and their little batteries and all that stuff. Don't be that person. So be out of that line and be ahead of things. And that's a good thing any time of year. We all know, when we had that, ice apocalypse this winter.
Yeah, we just dealt with it.
That we had ice for 3 weeks on the ground that we had to hack away at with pickaxes or whatever.
Yeah.
You never know what weather is going to hand you any time of the year. So having this year round is just a good practice. One of the things that we always keep in mind is that June 1st is the start of hurricane season. So everyone's thinking about that. Maybe that's the time each year that you reevaluate your go bag. Look at it again. Make sure everything is current. Make sure that anything that has changed is updated, that you have fresh batteries and fresh water and all the other things that we usually hear on those lists, but also that you've looked at your documents and that everything is still current.
And within not only the documents that you mentioned that you're going to need, but also thinking ahead if you've got kids to save their birth certificates and think about things you're going to need as a family, long term.
Right. The one thing that would jump to my mind on that is immunization records.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
Because
how do you recreate that?
Yeah. And your doctor's office is not going to necessarily be contactable to get the records from them. Yeah, you might have my chart, and that would be great. If you have all the kids' immunization records on my chart, but think ahead to make sure you can replicate the important documents that you'll need.
See, this is why you're such a good guest, because you think of these things, but this really does. You're thinking outside of just storm preparation is more than you know, going to the store and getting what you need.
Right. It's legal preparation for the legal hassles that come after a disaster that can be somewhat smoothed out with the right documents.
And we all know the way the government works on anything, to really be able to move ahead and to go from place to place and to get what you need, you are going to have some of these documents, unfortunately.
Right. There's a really great website that I wish more people knew about. It's called the Legal Aid Disaster Resource Center. So it was developed, I think, from a legal aid in, I'm going to say, Oklahoma or Arkansas. You can't imagine that they don't have natural disasters.
A few tornadoes and those kinds of things.
Easily. Yeah. And so they developed this website, and it's the initials of Legal Aid Disaster Resource Center. So it's LADRC.org. And it just has a ton of information. Everything you want to know about FEMA, which is very bureaucratic in terms of trying to get help the right way. You have to stand on your left foot on Tuesday and whistle Dixie. And, you know, there's all kinds of little steps along the way. So the more you know ahead of time, or at least have this resource, it has all kinds of drop down menus and tips and tricks and all that. So it's a great resource to, again, use for preparation so that you know a little bit ahead of time, can get all the documents that you need together, and be able to know how to handle the obvious things that are going to come up after a disaster, like home repairs after a disaster. Believe it or not, that's a real magnet for scammers. To come into a neighborhood after a disaster and say, I'll fix your roof, I'll do this, I'll do that. It's really important, even though you're desperate, to ask for references, to check whether their contractor license is up to date. Never, never, never pay them with cash, because you will never see them again. So be sure to get all agreements in writing. You know, those kind of very obvious things that I think if we're sitting here on a nice sunny day, we'd say, of course we're going to do that. No, you aren't. Not in an emergency.
No.
When all hell is breaking loose and you just want to get the rain to stop coming in your house and get that roof fixed, you're going to be desperate, and they know it, and they're going to take advantage. So the more you can kind of think through what some of those scenarios are, the better.
We take a quick break and come back. We'll talk when we come back about what to do, how to pay bills, and, you know, you mentioned housing, how to keep up with that when you have a situation like this. And we have Riley here, a law student. I want to talk to you, Riley, about what's law school like. You hear about all these things, and so we'll get in talk with you too when we come back. And Klockner Riley Bowling here this morning from Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. And again, the website that Ann mentioned, ladrc.org. is a great website, it sounds like, for just knowing, you know, how to put all this stuff together. LADRC.org. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner here, Riley Bowling here this morning from Legal Aid Works. We're going to talk to Riley in just a second about being in law school. She's at William & Mary Law, and we'll get into that in just a second. Ann Klockner is here for the executive director with Legal Aid Works, and we've been talking about just disaster preparation. We can talk about, like you said, Ann, and went through all the steps of all the things you need and how to protect them and how to be able to get to them. But then there's kind of the day-to-day life. Life does go on, and unfortunately, in these kinds of situations, even when there's destruction, you may be still on the hook for some things.
You absolutely are. So when a disaster comes through, several things happen. One is you could be losing your income because your job could just be stopped right away.
So
your income could be affected. Your ability to get to work could be affected. So even if your job is still there, you getting to your job is going to be problematic.
Sure.
So we discovered even in the disaster that was COVID, that when just the slightest nudge of your finances, suddenly you're in a big catastrophe because things tend to snowball. If you can't pay this bill, then that becomes problematic because then another bill comes due and you are still trying to pay the other bill, and it just kind of gets worse and worse. So one of the things to remember is that mortgages and leases are obligations that don't stop when a disaster hits. You think, well, I'm not living in my house. How could I be forced to pay my mortgage, or how could I be forced to pay for my apartment? A lot of it depends on what the mortgage says or what the lease says. And it could be that eventually you'll end up being able to end the lease early because there is no place to live anymore, but that's not a guarantee. And so you have these continuing obligations. When you're in a crisis, man-made, natural, whatever disaster, anything that disrupts your income, you have to prioritize payment of your bills and your debts. You don't pay all of them equally all the time. You might have to kind of pay some first and then some later. So which ones would you pay first? Which would be the most important ones? Absolutely number one, if you can pay no other bill than this one, you have to pay your mortgage or your lease, your rent first.
Housing.
The reason why is everything else can be sorted. But when you're living under the Route 1 bridge because you've been evicted, everything else gets harder. Why would you care about your credit card bill first if paying your credit card bill is not going to keep you housed? So housing is the absolute number one most important bill to prioritize, because you can be evicted, you can be foreclosed on super quickly. And you think, oh, they aren't going to do that because there was a disaster. No, that's exactly when they're going to do it, because they need their money. Mm-hmm. And they're going to want to hold you to their obligation that you signed on for. So absolutely number one would be paying for rent or mortgage. The next thing on that list right below that is basic utilities, something to keep the lights on, heat and AC, water, sewer, that kind of thing. Way, way down on the list are things like your cable bill. You should pay all your bills, but paying that in that order in a crisis is going to keep you at least housed.
Boy, this has brought back flashbacks, because we did have these discussions during COVID every single month about how to survive if you're not getting paid and do all that. And again, these are good things to think about too.
Well, you're going to get calls from all your creditors. They're all going to want their money, but you are in control of which ones you pay first. And it just, if you're really borrowing from Peter to pay Paul and you're really, really in a tight situation, always, always, always pay that rent or mortgage first, because it screws everything else up if you're not housed. That's the most essential thing. You can figure out how to get food from a food bank. You can figure out how to get clothing from a thrift store or from somewhere else. But the basics of living, of just making sure that you have a roof over your head, is going to be your main priority.
Good stuff. Good stuff to think about and to realize. And especially, we don't know what kind of storm season we have, but prepare for it just in case. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't use it for summer hurricane season, like you mentioned, there are winter storms and that kind of thing too.
You bet.
So Ann Klockner here this morning. Riley Bowling also here. She is a it has roots to Hartwood in Stafford County and is a second year law student at William and Mary. So what are some of the things you're doing this summer with Legal Aid Works, Riley?
Right, yeah. So this summer, I've really just gotten the opportunity to kind of essentially help out wherever I'm needed around the office, which, I mean, is there's always so much going on. So, of course, there's a lot to do. So, I mean, that can include things like, I mean, just putting some files together, you know, some of the stuff like that. But then also I've been helping, like, prepare documents, which has been really interesting to kind of see how these, like, how, like, the law is kind of put into action, you know, by putting together some of these documents for, you know, things like divorces. I've been working on a lot of divorces through the office recently. I've been doing a bit of research, you know, just kind of things like that, essentially anywhere where I'm needed.
I would think that when you go back to school after having been to do some of the things, because I know people that do internships always talk about, you mentioned it, you're seeing things in real life and not in a book.
Right. Yeah, essentially. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so when you go back to law school, you'll kind of have a different view of some of the things that you'll know practically how they're handled.
Oh, definitely. Like there are a lot of times where, you know, we'll say something in law school, you know, the professor will say like, oh, well, you know, generally like in the law, things are this way. But then when you actually see it put into practice, it's like, well, no, not really. You know, like, you know, they might say something about like, oh, here's this case where it shows like, you know, this thing about like evictions, but it's in like Kansas or something like that. And then you go in and you see how like evictions and things like that actually happen in Virginia. And it's like, well, actually, that's not really like what's going on here. You know, I think the way that, you know, the laws work here are maybe a little different than they are in like other states. And
right.
We're kind of being taught about, you know, the law all over the place. So it's really good to see how things are actually happening like in Virginia. And I've especially really enjoyed, you know, because I'm from like Stafford County, Fredericksburg area originally, it's been really, really great to see how things have kind of been happening like around me for all of my life. And just now getting to see it from, you know, the insider perspective, I guess.
Yeah. So we always hear about law school and how tough it is, and movies always show. I can't think of the name of the movie from like
The Paper Chase.
That's yes, where you've got
or My Cousin Vinny. It's either that or My Cousin Vinny.
Right. No, it was The Paper Chase, because I was thinking, what was that? It was that old guy in the movie, the professor,
John Houseman.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You have these visions of law school. Is it much different than graduate, you know, undergrad?
Oh, definitely. And the thing is, before law school, I actually went to a different graduate school. So I have a bachelor's and a master's from the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. Go Alabama.
They all say that. Everybody I know who comes through here who's in Alabama,
there's a contractual obligation
to say that.
Oh yeah, once you like get your diploma, they actually make you sign a contract that says every time somebody mentions Alabama, you have to say Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
So
yes,
right. So yeah, I was in a different graduate program before I went to law school, and it is like vastly different, both in the way that like classes are handled, but also in the way that you go about like getting your grade. So like in my graduate program, it was a master's in history. So those classes were pretty small. It was a lot of very like discussion-based learning. And it's kind of similar in law school, but law school, it's more lecture-focused. But then when you're in these classes, they do these things called cold calls. I haven't seen The Paper Chase, unfortunately, so maybe that's in the movie. It isn't Legally Blonde, so that's my reference for law school. but essentially, when you're going through these classes, the professors will give you sort of this like general background information on this area of the law that you're supposed to be learning about that day. But then you're supposed to come to class having read a few cases. These might come out of the Supreme Court, or these might come out of these like higher courts in these different states. So like the Supreme Court of, say, Illinois or Arkansas or somewhere like that, just so long as it's relevant to the topic at hand. And so you're expected to kind of have the facts of this case memorized. So just like the basic background, why the judge might have made a decision in this way. And essentially every class, a professor will just randomly call on like one or two, maybe even like three or four people in that class. And you're expected to essentially like both recite the facts of that case, but then they'll also ask you, okay, how does this apply to like, you know, this topic that we're talking about today? Or, you know, what if this fact was different? What do you think the judge would have decided then? You know, just things like that. So It's a pretty like high, maybe not high stakes environment, but it definitely feels like it when you're there in front of like 100 or so of your peers and you're getting, you know, asked this, that, or the other question about some case that you just read on like 3 hours of sleep the night before.
Right. I was going to say, it sounds like there's just a lot of preparation, and because you see that, you see it in movies, or you hear, you know, somebody will just say, well, what do you do about Robinson versus Moore in, you know, 1927?
Right.
You know, those kinds of things, it's just, you look at it and you just think there is an incredible amount of, I guess, memorization and all of that.
It's some memorization. A lot of it is just taking good notes, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
You know, some it's a little bit of just going through the textbook and being able to figure out, like, what is what? You know, what are these background facts? Where is the judge actually saying, like, what he's thinking about this case? Because sometimes the judges can be a little tricky. They'll, like, start off saying one thing, but then they're like, well, actually, no, because that would be, like, ridiculous if we applied that. So I'm going to take, like, the complete opposite direction in my actual decision. And so just kind of, like, going through and, like, parsing that into, like, actual, like, notes that are easy to follow when you're, like, sitting there and you're, like, shaking like a leaf when the professor's calling on you.
Yeah. Boy, it just, you said something about grades are different. How does that work?
Right. So in law school, everything is graded on a curve, and you only really, like, your entire grade is based off of one final exam. Some classes are a little different. I had one class where it was like 85% of your grade is the final exam, and then 15% is based off of your participation in class. But essentially, I had, let's see, most of my exams were 4 hours long. I had one that was 8 hours long. And so you're essentially just in a room for a few hours. Some are open note, some are closed note. And essentially, the exam is essentially testing, like, can you look at this, like, fact pattern that I'm giving you? So it'll tell you, like, the story about, like, oh, you know, if it's something like you're looking at, like, a lawsuit or something, it's like, oh, well, this person, you know, put this wet floor sign down, but this person didn't see it and they tripped and fell. And, you know, can you apply what we've been learning in class to this? But also, can you apply what we've learned in class better than the person sitting next to you? Because if you can do that, then you get a better grade than the person sitting next to you.
Wow. So you're really, there's really competition. At all levels.
Right. It can get pretty stiff. Fortunately, the people at William & Mary have been really amazing so far. I mean, all of my classmates, you'd think that, you know, being in such a competitive environment, everybody would constantly be trying to, like, undermine each other and, like, trip each other up. But, I mean, everybody at William & Mary has really been, like, amazing about, you know, oh, let's get together. Let's, like, learn these concepts together. You know, okay. Let's, like, you know, this is something that I'm having trouble with. Like, can you help me, like, kind of figure this out? And they will, like, drop everything and do it. Like, they've been fantastic.
How did you choose, William & Mary Law?
Right. So I actually had a friend when I was an undergraduate. He was in law school and he went to William & Mary. And so I was able to go down there during one of my, like, school breaks and go check out the campus. And I just immediately just fell in love with William & Mary. I mean, Williamsburg is just a gorgeous area. You know, you have the colonial area. And of course, coming from, like, a history background, I thought that was really neat. But then also, when I was really looking into law schools, I mean, William & Mary just has a lot of really amazing opportunities to get some practical experience. You know, we have a lot of really great clinics. We have a really fantastic, career services office. And so those are some of the things that I was really looking for in law school because, you know, I knew that law school was more or less like a trade school for me. I know a lot of people go to get some of that more, like, theoretical knowledge, but for me, I really wanted to get that, like, practical experience, and I thought William & Mary had some really great programs to do that.
Is there a certain part of law that you're going to go into after this, you're hoping to?
It's a really great question. That's kind of what I've been trying to figure out, mostly this summer.
Yeah.
I know I've really actually enjoyed a lot of the property work that I've done, you know, things like evictions and things like that. So I think something really property-focused would be interesting. I really enjoyed contracts this year. So I think just something on the civil side of the law, I think, would be really neat to go into.
But I'm sure being at Legal Aid Works this summer gives you a wide view of a lot of different topics.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they cover so many areas of the law. And I mean, with so few attorneys and so many places to cover, it's really amazing the work that they, like, can do. But it's just such a breadth of topics that I've been able to explore this summer because I've been somewhere where, you know, they're just so dedicated to helping people in this, like, more civil side of the law.
So, and as you discuss and talk about what law school is like, so taking the bar, that's that looms, I guess, at some point.
It's kind of the heavy cloud that's sort of over everything you do in law school. You know, when you're like learning something for a class, it's like, okay, well, how much of this do I need to remember for the bar? You know, when I'm signing up for classes, there are certain classes that they recommend you take because those are going to be subjects that you're supposed to know for the bar. You know, they'll tell us like, oh, well, you know, when you're doing bar prep, this subject is probably easier to pick up on than this subject. So maybe you take the classes, like I think they said to take trusts and estates, because I think that's supposed to be one of the harder ones, whereas, you know, something, some other classes you might be able to just learn through, you know, your own, like, self-study after you finish law school.
Oh, I have a headache just thinking about just law school is even, that was fascinating. It's even more than I imagined.
It can be a lot sometimes, but you know, Williamsburg is a great place to be, and William & Mary is a great place to be, just because there are a lot of people who are really there to sort of help you, I guess, take that pressure on. You know, maybe not take the pressure off, because obviously there's going to be pressure either way. But you know, they make the load a little lighter.
Interesting. Well, it's great having you here and great meeting you this morning.
Thank you. It's nice to meet you too.
So when you get out. How do you find a job after you get out of law school?
Right. So I think it kind of depends on the person. Some people, if they have a job lined up for their second year, sometimes they will go ahead and just rehire you for after law school. But if you don't have that job lined up for your second year, or, you know, if you do have a job lined up for second year, sometimes they don't hire people after law school. So then you kind of just have to go through your whole third year just applying for places, sort of just like the regular job application process. But there are some, I mean, everything is online these days for jobs. So, you know, it's a lot of websites that are maybe geared specifically towards law students, helping them find jobs. Or, I mean, honestly, just like LinkedIn, Indeed, some of the classic like law job or just job websites in general. It's not too dissimilar from, you know, the way you might find a job coming out of undergraduate or another graduate program, but there are just some things that are maybe a little more specified for the law.
Riley Bowling, a William & Mary law student, second year William & Mary law student to be, and she's at Legal Aid Works this summer, and she's an Alabama grad.
Correct. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. I wanted to give you a chance to do that one more time. That was great. Quick break. We'll wrap it up with Riley and Ann and Legal Aid Works. LegalAidWorks.org on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
It's the only local talk show in Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform to hear Town Talk anytime, 24/7, 365. And now, Ted Schubel.
What a great show this has been. Legal Aid Works and Ann Klockner here along with Riley Bowling, who's a William & Mary law student. That's just fascinating hearing all that. Before we get out of here, Ann, there is a virtual Zoom meeting tonight, Know Your Rights in Housing Discussion with the Virginia Poverty Law Center. This looks really interesting.
Yeah, so Virginia Poverty Law Center is a wonderful organization, vplc.org, and you can find the information about tonight's event. It's from 7 to 8:30. It's by Zoom. You have to register in advance. You can do that by going to vplc.org/events, and you'll see the flyer for the virtual tenants town hall. There's two things you're going to get from that. One is you're going to find out some very basic information about the new laws that have just been passed and your rights as a tenant. And then the second part of that is a listening session where we want to hear from tenants to say, what's wrong with our housing situation right now? We all know that there's almost no affordable housing in this area. What do you think would make it better? What about the eviction process? What about all the things that you deal with as a tenant, getting the landlord to make repairs, how security deposits are returned, all those things? If you have ideas and want to have somebody hear what you have to say about how the system is for housing in our community, they would love to hear from you during this virtual tenants town hall tonight, 7 to 8:30.
And you can go to vplc.org/events to sign up.
That's exactly right.
And I looked at it this morning. It's real easy to do.
Yep, super easy to do, and you can both listen in, but also maybe just contribute your ideas and your experience, your lived experience as a tenant and what you've gone through.
vplc.org/events. It's from 7 to 8:30 tonight. It's virtual. There's been a bunch of these meetings around the state, but this is the one tonight
that's virtual, that's virtual for all for over Virginia.
Everybody can do that. So, okay. Good stuff this morning. Thank you for bringing Riley along.
I'm always thrilled to bring our bright law students along, because it's always a great experience for us in the summer to have that burst of youthful energy.
Yeah. Riley, good luck to you.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on.
And not good luck for your undergrad football team this year, but we'll see.
I think we're going to have a good year ahead of us. Roll Tide.
Ann Klockner, Riley Bowling with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. Thank you both. Have a great rest of your summer. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Greenline Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.